everyone. I will call the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation to order. We have an informational meeting tonight, but first of all, we will open a work session for the possible and probable introduction of committee member measures. Senator Ferry, Adam.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have three LCs for consideration as potential committee bills, LC 3372, LC 3311, as well as LC 1143. As soon as we get one of them is currently up on OLIS, two will be shortly.
And just as a reminder, the introduction of committee bills does not indicate support or opposition. It's a courtesy we do to get concepts into the process. So, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the following Legislative Council draft be introduced as committee bills. LC 3372, dated January 26, 2017. LC 1143, dated January 27, 2017, and LC 3311, dated January 26, 2017.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved LC 3372, LC 1143, and LC 3311 be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, now we will move to our informational meeting starring our friends at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and assorted hangers-on. So I will open the informational meeting and call to the podium Rob Patridge, Steve Marks, and Rob Bovet.
Reintroduce bills. Goody. Anything you liked? Anything you liked?
Only one that we know what it is. The other two we don't know.
Welcome.
Thank you for having us today. Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rob Patridge. I'm the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm joined today by Rob Bovet from the Association of Oregon County, as well as Steve Marks, who's the executive director of the OLCC, for the record. We're happy to be here today. As the co-chairs and members of the committee, we were asked to help work with a work group related to what it would look like if the OLCC were to assume a lot of the responsibilities of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And you asked us to do that and gave us instructions and gave us some people to work with. We went out and did the work, and over the last few weeks have spent probably over 20 hours together trying to come up with some ideas of what it would look like should a lot of those responsibilities come to the OLCC. The group we worked with was diverse and good, with our major focus being if we were to assume part of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program that we put patients first, and that patient access would be the first priority to make sure that that worked, and then subsequent to that, then what we would do related to public safety, how we would make the system work, how we would achieve some government efficiency related to all this. We looked mainly at the structure of folding these together. We know that there's a lot of tangential issues that are pretty substantive related to public use of marijuana, smoking lounges, all those kinds of things, as well as testing. We didn't really deal with those issues on a consensus basis within the group. We looked more at the structure of what it would look like and how we could make sure that patients' rights weren't subsumed and kept as a primary measure if it was brought over to OLCC. So with that in mind, we have provided the committee prior to this, and I think it's up on the screen for the audience to view. Our idea today is to walk you through this kind of straw man, for lack of a better term. We appreciate the work of the entire group of people who were involved in this, as well as some of your legislative staff, and we appreciate Adam's participation in this as well to kind of keep this going down. We were asked to be the convener, and so that's what we did, and try and be the convener. And we certainly appreciate the work of local government. And Rob, so with that in mind, I'd just like to go through this, unless there are any initial questions.
Please do. Thanks.
Okay. So we'll take you through this. We'll take you through this documentation. First was trying to address the structural issues for how we would make sure that that people were that the medical community and the marijuana community was represented at the OLCC. We felt that that was important. We would keep an OLCC structure of having a five-member commission. Currently, it's by congressional district. In addition to it being by congressional district, it would be it's by political party. We would keep that same structure of five members in place. The difference would be currently the alcohol, there's an alcohol licensee is a voting member. We would no longer make that a voting member. We would make it a non-voting member. So we would have a non-voting member from the marijuana industry, or they would have to be a licensee, and then one from the alcohol industry. In order to make sure that we had a full voice from both alcohol and marijuana, there would be two standing statutory advisory committees, a cannabis advisory committee and an alcohol advisory committee. The industry representative from each of those would chair those committees, and they would be made up of licensees. So there would be three licensees or four total, including the chair, from a cross-section of the industry, from each of those industries. Alcohol, you know, is a three-tier system as opposed to marijuana, which is not. So we said it would be a cross-section. We'd have one law enforcement person, one public health person, and one public member. We'd put that out with a two-year sunrise on that so we could get through the rulemaking process related to this. We felt like this would be a good opportunity to have some input, and the reason that we didn't do some of the voting membership was related to people who are marijuana licensees voting on alcohol-related issues. We think that there's potentially some federal problem there. So I think that that was why we created this structure and why we're having more continual involvement from a statutory measure.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pazanski.
Just clarification, Rob. You said, and it's on the thing, two-year sunrise. Is that supposed to be sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise, meaning,
so coming in.
That, meaning it would come in 2 years after this was all
That's
put together.
That's the first time I've heard that term.
That's sunrise.
It's kind of intuitive.
Opposite sunset.
I know. Okay, so that was what we had on the structure. The other idea then is on page two. That would be the OHA Medical Use Cannabis Board. We'd recommend that the OHA form a cannabis board that would be a consolidation of the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana and Qualifying Conditions Committee. This would be a committee that would adopt cardholder acceptance and revocation procedures. It would be about the qualifying conditions. It would also decide on exceptions for sharing medical marijuana related to some ideas related to poundage that we'll go over later, recommendations for medical research, and recommendations to the OLCC on serving size and dosage, and study patient access for low-income patients. So that would be their initial charges related to that. The recommendation was three medical marijuana industry members, three physicians, and three public members, one of which would have to be a patient cardholder. And that would have a two-year sunrise. So both of those structural pieces would go into place over a two-year time frame. It would provide oversight over the medical cardholder system, and it would develop a process for high-need medical cardholders, people that would need more than a limit that would get set at some point in time for free types of cannabis that we're going to discuss later. On to the OLCC name change. There was no, we know that there will probably be a name change. We didn't have a recommendation as to what it would be one way or the other. There have been some requests on the alcohol side to at least keep control in the name because that's the kind of state that we are, but we didn't have any particular charge related to that. On to page number three, we would cover the medical cards. OHA would continue to would continue to provide the medical cards, and the OHA Medical Use of Cannabis Board would determine their eligibility related to those things. In addition to that, we would want to create a card validation system between OHA and OLCC so that a dispensary or any OLCC licensee, if somebody was obtaining marijuana from them, would be able to type their name, or not their name, their card number into the system. We wouldn't have their names to verify their card, so it would just be an automated system that card is still valid. We also would want to create a system to share the data so that OLCC retailers can electronically identify valid card holders to be eligible for medical grade products and no tax, and the annual amounts over a certain limit set for each product type for availability. And also shared information would be exempt from public disclosure. However, OLCC would be able to anonymize the data in order to provide, you know, public reports and things like that. So that would be our plan related to the medical card holder system. We already know that OHA has a system in place to register medical card holders and caregivers. We think it needs to be more robust, at least electronically. And, you know, we've already talked about we want to prevent any fraud.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Senator Cruz.
Just an interesting question, Rob, because marijuana is Schedule I, I'm assuming that any of this information wouldn't be subject to HIPAA?
Madam Chair and Senator Cruz, it would be under Oregon's privacy laws related to this information.
Okay,
but not
specifically HIPAA.
It wouldn't be under HIPAA because HIPAA is federal, but we do have, you know, cardholder information. We wouldn't want that out there. Nobody has any vision.
Right.
You know, somebody's going to pierce that veil. So that would be, the security would certainly be a big concern. All right. On to page number 4 of your pages, it would related to OLCC processor, wholesaler, retailer, and lab licenses. The OLCC would license all processors, wholesalers, retailers, and labs. The processors can produce both recreational and medical grade products, which are allowed today, but everybody now would be licensed at OLCC. Again, wholesalers can sell to both recreational and medical grade product, which is allowed today, and also retailers can sell to both medical and recreational product, provided that they provide a valid card and card holder. We have an existing system in place for our licensing enforcement. We felt there was government efficiency there. It creates a clear line and eliminates local government law enforcement related to difficulties in determining what's the appropriate licensing agency. There'd be one agency to go to for licensing. It eliminates duplicative licensing in our enforcement processes, and it also would simplify a lot of the rulemaking. We had a lot of issues related to trying to make sure our rules were congruent with each other as we move through the system, because there are a lot of moving pieces and parts that went on. We would need to create an opt-out exemption for OLCC retail stores to sell medical products only in opt-out cities and counties, and Rob will cover that. Rob will cover some of the land use issues and those things later in this discussion. In addition, we have the next thing is public labeling, dosage, and serving size. Today, OLCC regulates labeling, packaging, dosing, and service size. We would eliminate any confusion related to any dual rulemaking because we would now have it all. And the OLCC will receive guidance and dosage size from OHA's medical use from that cannabis board that would be created. Next on page 5, we have worker permits. We would continue to do the worker permits. We already have a system in place to do that. On the research certificates, OLCC would continue to regulate those, but now we would have a medical board, this OLCC medical board, the OHA medical board in place that would allow us to get some additional information from docs and other people. Would have a formal way to get some information from that. On to page 6. So this was the page 6 was the area where there was not consensus reached related to the group. I think that this is going to have to be the legislature's determination of what is appropriate for a personal medical grow. There are a varying degree of opinions, not only amongst the regulatory community, local government, and the industry itself. So there's a variety of issues related to personal medical grow. The maximum number of plants that a patient can be grown in a household with a resident currently is 10 plants. The Attorney General's opined that it's 4 personal use and 6 medical plants for one cardholder, so that's 10. So that's one of the options. Another option that's out there is, you know, you only get personal use for 4, and then you can have 6 plants, only 6 plants if you have a medical card, not the doubling of the 4 and 6. And then, so there's all kinds of limits. There is a group, basically, the options that were identified were mostly around the 10 plant and 16 plant limits related to that. This personal medical grow exception would be no registration is required other than obtaining the medical cards from OHA was the thought. No plants can be grown for a non-resident. However, resident cardholders can gift excess marijuana to another medical cardholder regardless they live in the same or different household. No sales are allowed. There were existing possession limits would apply, and personal growers may take cannabis processing to OLC to an OLCC processor, and they can bring it to the processor, have it processed, and get it back out of the system, provided it goes in and out of the CTS system to and from that individual who brought it to them. But like I said, there's not consensus around this. We identified a list of options below. First was number of plant count. The second was, can you grow for somebody else at your residence? There was a question about whether you had to live at that residence with your medical marijuana card or not. I think that there was no consensus related to that. And then what's included in a plant count? Flowers or seedlings. There was consensus that the medical plants would have to be flowering plants, so they would be determined to be flowering plants. There was consensus among the group. Right, my understanding is today that on the medical side, that there have an unlimited amount of seedlings or non-flowering plants. That's really hard to enforce. So the group said that there should be a 6 times the number of a 6 times factor of the plant limit, whatever you set by legislators. So example, if you said 10 plants was the maximum, then there could be up to 60 non-flowering medical plants or starts or whatever you want to call them. So that was agreed to generally by the industry. And
what was that ratio based on? That sounds very high.
Well, I think it was all over the map. There was a group that said 99 plants. If you go back originally,
no, but what was the rational
done,
basis for 6-1 versus 2-1 or 1-1?
Yeah, it was cycling for an indoor grow predominantly, and also to deal with varying strains that people wanted to deal with varying strains of plants. So that was where the consensus was built. There were some people who have a bunch of strains. They wanted to be able to keep their mother plants that were non-flowering. So that's how that was arrived at generally amongst the group. So that was the personal medical grow. I think that was the most controversial piece of where it was at. I think at some point in time, you know, I think everybody's in agreement that we would, though, like some kind of bright line ability for, you know, so that everybody understands what the bright line test is about what you can really have or not have, rather than leave it kind of amorphous, which is a little bit of what we have today. So the next page is page 7. OLCC growers and bump up in the medical canopy. So our idea related to this was how can we create an opportunity to make sure that medical patients are taken care of, and especially low-income medical patients. The idea would be that we talked about the bump up, and you all approved basically the bump up in prior sessions that would allow up to 10% of the additional canopy that OLCC was setting. We did it based on cardholders. Based on what we're presenting today, and the consensus of the group was, we're going to decouple the cardholder relationship that's there now. And what we would do is that an OLCC grower could get a bump up in medical canopy. Size of the bump up would be approximately about 10%, which is what we're working on in the current rules today. The idea would be is that they can now get the bump up because we're going to track by cardholder that if they gave away 75% of the marijuana that was produced as a result of that bump up, that they could, if they gave that away for free, then 20% of the bump up could be sold into the commercial market. So that was the idea related to the bump up. So that would provide a substantial amount of free medical marijuana that would be available to patients and be patient-centric. It creates a market-driven approach as opposed to creating some bureaucracy that brings in money and hands it out, or the state being involved directly. It would allow the growers to have the relationship with medical patients to allow some of this marijuana to be provided to medical patients for free. And so consequently, no cardholder relationships required. The additional thing we did is on page 8 related to access for medical patients. And we have constantly heard, and this committee has heard, trying to deal with the smaller grower who deals with medical patients. That's part of the reason that we created the micro-tier ones. We talked to the legislature about creating a micro-tier one, which can grow up to 2,500 square feet of canopy size. Our idea is that we would add a micro-tier one with a medical endorsement for growers that want to commit to sharing a percentage of their harvest to medical cardholders. The remainder of their harvest can be sold into the OLCC system for dispensaries to either sell on the medical or recreational side. Our idea on this is that today, you know, a lot of these registered growers pay $200. We'd have them pay the $200 instead of the $1,000 licensing fee under OLCC. So it would be equivalent to what they're doing today. And in addition to subsidizing the annual licensing fee, the OLCC would also not require these people to pay the $480 per year of the cannabis tracking system or seed-to-sale tracking system cost. The cost to subsidize each grower is $1,280 per year or $2,560 biennia. The idea would be that these growers would give a percentage of their plant or their product to medical people for free. In year one, it would be a 50-50 split. I know I'm bouncing around a little bit, but it would be a 50-50 split. So 50% they would be required to give to medical cardholders for free, and 50% would be sold into the OLCC system. We did that in year one to allow these people to recover any costs that they might have related to additional security requirements or other items. So that would allow them to transition into the system. And in year number two and beyond, it would be a 75-25 split. Again, they could sell 75 to, they could give away 75 to the cardholders and sell 25% into the commercial system, which is what this committee and the OLCC has heard, is that people would like to sell into the system. It would be all seed to sale track then, and that would be the idea. Just so this committee is aware, the total amount of cost over 6 plants into the OLCC system. Now I'm back on the left-hand side. The total amount of cost if all eligible OHA growers over 6 plants converted would be $8.9 million per year or $17.9 million per biennia to subsidize that kind of a system fully. That's about 9,000 licensees, assuming that everybody... Yeah, 8.9 per year, 17.9 per biennia. You know, we know that some of that is going to fall out. The number of licensees won't be a direct conversion. I think you've seen that in other states that have combined their medical and recreational marijuana system as well, but we don't have a good figure on cost estimates. And then over 12 plants, we gave you the statistics below, would be $3.3 million or $6.6 million per biennium. The cost would have to be subsidized through tax revenue or other means if you chose to do that. But this would allow people to move in as a microtier one, be tracked, and be through the system. They microtier one growers with medical license may not be licensed to a residence. However, they may be licensed to a non-residential area on their property. They would meet the same reduced security requirements as other micro-tier one growers. We're very interested at OLCC, and we've heard and are responsive, we believe, to the community to deal with any of the security issues. I think, you know, we have it in mind that we want to make sure that there's security, but by the same token, it can't be overly burdensome to have these people come into the system. You know, I told people earlier today when they asked about security, you know, I think at the OLCC we're willing to be flexible related to what those requirements are. We want plug-and-play systems that they can go out and get and purchase off the shelf and not some specialized kinds of security systems and other things. You know, we want them to be able to go to a Costco and have 30 days worth of video and be able to do a system that works and is adequate to meet the security needs, but at the same time, you know, be competitive in the market. So those are kind of a lot of the ideas related to what we've got. Rob Bovet's here, and I think that, you know, I know that there's some we've had some discussion, though we didn't really deal with zoning issues directly, but I would like Rob to address maybe some of the city and county zoning issues related to some initial thoughts that he might have.
Oh, you want me to do that now?
Yeah, why don't we do that now since we're on there?
Okay, well, before we move on to your part, do people have questions for Rob? I had a question about this subsidy. I'm just wondering if there is a, because the goal is to get an incentive for medical patients, especially low-income medical patients, whether there might be another system, you know, for the same cost, you could actually more directly just pay for it. You know, have you done that kind of analysis?
Madam Chair, Steve Marks for the record. We looked at it. You could certainly do a cash subsidy, right? You'd have to do some analysis of the population who is medically needy, who is perhaps in poverty by some list to figure that. And I know OHA, there's been lists created at different times, but you could certainly subsidize the patients instead of the grow and plant. That's a possibility. We believe that this exercise required us to explicitly not do that, to actually focus on subsidizing the growers to produce the medical product, and that would be the preferential way for Oregon to approach it today.
Other questions? Okay. Welcome, Rob.
Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties, and I'll try to avoid any wonky land use talk because other than Representative Helm and I think we just, I'll bore you to death. So I'll just keep it really at 50,000 feet unless you want to dive down. So a serious concern that has been expressed by some, if not many, of the medical growers, the existing designated medical growers, is this whole land use stuff. Many of them think they're in kind of a gray zone, and I tend to agree. So I don't share their concerns when it comes to resource lands, EFU, etc. I think those are pretty clean. I think they're good. We made them a farm use. The real problem comes in non-resource lands. And they can be all kinds of different. There's an alphabet soup of zones and zone calls. If you've seen, as I've said before, if you've seen one county's land use plan and system, you've seen one county's land use plan and system. This is the design we've had since 1973. Actually, I should say there are 277 land use planning systems in Oregon if you add the cities and the counties. And that's the design since 73. Resource lands are treated differently than non-resource. So legislating in the area of non-resource lands is dangerous because you have 277 disparate impacts all over the state. So how do we address these concerns? So among the designated medical growers, they generally fall into three categories. We have conforming uses, pre-existing non-conforming uses, and just flat-out non-conforming uses. Now, as a practical matter for most of those in counties, not inside cities, code enforcement really isn't an issue because, to be honest, counties don't have the resources to do it. We are a complaint-driven system. So even if you're a non-conforming use, not even pre-existing, unless you're really irritating your neighbors, really nothing happens to you. I'm just being real. So how do we ensure that all of these changes in pathways we've created for what we'll used to call designated medical growers and now possibly a micro tier one grower with medical endorsed, whatever we call these things, how do we ensure that they won't lose their status because this change? We're essentially allowing them to be a for-profit thing. And so I think we can craft something surgical that ensures that nobody loses their status and that that fear can be taken off the table. I have not worked out any language to do that yet. It's just conceptual now. I've been talking with the planning directors about how to construct that. I need to do more work. It's just something we literally kind of came up with on Friday. So I think there's a pathway, and I guess I'll give my, because this is my, I guess, my brief time to talk, I'll give my overall impression of all of this work we've been doing. It's been proven to be incredibly complex. It's important work. It's a simple concept, moving all of the marijuana businesses and integrating them at OLCC. Simple concept, but of course the devil will be in the details on every single thing that Rob mentioned before. And the devil will be in the details on what I craft up too. So I think we can put all this together and we can give the current existing medical growers some comfort in being able to do what Rob has described without changing their land use status and creating more problems. So I guess if you consider that good news, I think that's some good news.
We got a couple more pages and
okay. Oh, I just, we're kind of switching back from the regulation to the land use stuff, so I didn't want to lose the train.
That was a land use commercial.
That was an interruption.
Now back to your regular programming.
So we've put in more detail and ideas around how that may or may not work within the scope of the document that we provided you. Like Rob said, it's initial. We're trying to get to some of the work there. Finally, on page 9 is the OSCC licensees sharing product with the cardholders. The OSCC growers, retailers, processors can share with any cardholder under the system within a limit. We talked about a 3-pound limit. Anything beyond that 3-pound limit would then be given. They would need to go to that medical cannabis board to receive an exception for that. The cardholder can take product from the OSCC grower or cardholder to grow. And they can take their product again to an OLCC processor to process the product or into an extract. All licensees and medical card growers can share tested products with nonprofit medical cannabis resource centers regulated by the OLCC. So those are some of the ideas that we've got related to what we need to do. And finally, one of my big concerns as the chair of the OLCC is having adequate staffing to do the job that we need to get done and having adequate time to do what needs to get done related to this type of a system. As we said before, there are 9,000 cardholders that are there are 9,000 grow sites for two cardholders or more currently under the Food and Health Authority system. In order to swallow that amount of licensees in the OLCC system, it will be a daunting task that would have to be rolled out over a period of time. I think our idea would be that they would use, they would kind of get into metric, get into the seed to sale system, and then we would have to do some provisional licensing and roll those licensing forward in order to, you know, as we did inspections and other things. So there would be some time for cardholder, I mean, for grow sites to do those kinds of things. And but we would have the enforcement people in place. It would be complaint driven related to some of those types of things. But it would take some time. I'm going to let Steve maybe go over the timeline a little bit, since Steve's going to be the guy to, you know, should the legislature decide to do that. But I would tell you now that we need more staff than we currently have. And, you know, if this is going to continue down this path, I know you're in a tight budget situation for Carl and, you know, everybody who was here during those nine, Jenny and Ted and, everybody else, Senator Pazinas, Senator Beyer, we were all here during those nine special sessions where we kept getting dragged back and back and back to session to try and solve the budget problems, and Senator Cruz as well. So, you know, I just want to make sure that despite this being a tough budget environment, if you want us to do the job right, if you want us to do the job well, if you don't want kind of the backlash that OHA has gotten, they haven't spent the money on the on providing the customer service. We need the job to do the customer service, to do it the right way, to ensure the integrity of the system, to make sure that we protect the system, and we make sure that we give resources to local government, that we give resources to these growers and the patient community. And I want to make sure that should this happen, that you at least try and make that investment, even in a tough budget environment. I know it's tough. Sorry. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve on the timeline with that caveat.
So I we put some thought into the timeline, but I think the timeline is, you know, we need to create at the pace that you need it to work for us and for the licensee communities to make happen. You already know that we have another 1,000 licenses to get through with our current recreational system. I'm hoping that it minimally by the end of the biennium we'll take about 500 of those out of the mix. But you also know from, and we know from the experience of building up a cannabis tracking system, hiring a staff, being able to mobilize in the field, then we need some time. So the cannabis tracking system needs to be rewritten to do this, to track to the patient cards at all levels along the way. That'll take a little bit of time. We'll have to add staff. Quite frankly, depending on how much you want us to do, how quickly, we have very limited capacity at our Milwaukee headquarters to put in new staff, so we'd have to think about potentially leased office space, which is fine. We have some offices around, the opportunity to do it, but all those pieces take a little time. So we've talked about trying to give us a year's worth of time to begin to issue the first licensing or provisional licensing. One of the ideas here is that you would we'd be able to take over with substantially the same security rules that OHA currently has and maybe move licensees into a provisional license under metric until we could fully license them over time. But given the kind of numbers and the kind of uncertainty we have about how many of these card these growers are registered out there, how many of them are going to actually enter the system, I think you want to fund us to produce a certain amount of those, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 per year, to try to met that out. But I think it's going to take within the, you know, next biennium, it'll take the full biennium and maybe a little longer to actually successfully transfer everyone into the system. But we have the opportunity, I think, to put them in a position where product's being tracked, where we're getting out and knowing who, you know, there was more serious applications in our initial process, and those that sort of waited to move their applications or had economic reasons in the rec product. So I think we can met some of those over time, which is helpful here, but we also don't want to build you up for the highest level of expectation only to have it not show up. So we're going to have to think about those things as we roll this out.
We've provided kind of a rough timeline for you in the document.
Senator Krasinski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So, Rob, going back to the money and the transition and all like that, you know that at this point the legislature some time back, maybe 4 or 6 years ago, allowed for the diversion of medical card money to be diverted from, I'm going to call it, cannabis programs, and it's actually funding other programs within the health, under the health authority. So has that been factored in as to, because when Representative Buckley was here, we talked about making the step to try to get that money back in. So it seems to me there's revenue there that was supposed to be going to the medical program that we should be able to tap into. And I understand we're in dire times, but we had this discussion for this committee before, and I'm just wondering if that was even on the table. Was anyone even looking at that money coming back into the system for its appropriate use?
Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Brzezinski, we certainly we had the discussion about how much money was there and that it was certainly not being used in the OHA program currently. We were not tasked with finding the particular money, and as somebody who dealt in budgets during my time in the building, you know, I think that you have a monumental task at hand.
Well, and to build on your question, Senator Brzezinski, is I look at this subsidy for micro growers, that might be a constructive diversion.
Right. One other, if I could.
Please.
So, and this is probably for Stephen, since in the timeline, and I know that all of y'all have talked about it, but this transitional period of time, looking at the timeline, is it my understanding what you were proposing is maybe some type of provisional licenses? Because my biggest concern is we go through this transition, even though on paper this looks good, we're going to get more feedback from the public as to whether it really works or does what we want it to. But we already know that we've had these crunches. I mean, as I've told you in the office, I had a call where someone was complaining that the cost for edibles has doubled for them to be able to access it, and talking about the medical needy. He said that for him it's going to be very difficult, but he says that he's not as, I'm going to say, worst off as some of the people financially. So what I want to try to make certain is if we go this route and we're going to make these transitions, that we're not going to have another bunch of obstacles for patients. Everyone says we want to take care of the patients, that they're our number one goal, and that they can get their product. But we also know that in some ways the market's going to demand what might be getting grown. And so for these specialty boutique growers, I'd want to make certain they don't get caught where they can't afford to make the transition or wait that length of time.
Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, there's a lot wrapped into that about, you know, bottlenecks that we may come up to, the regulatory authorities, and the economics of marijuana production. I can only tell you what I told and had a little discussion about, you know, the potential doubling of the cost of edibles. You know, we still don't have all of our, we don't have a fully evolved system, at least on the rec side and sales, so don't know where that's going to end up. We know we took some steps with OHA did to streamline the testing, and that's had some positive benefits because we've seen products coming in. I don't think we've seen every producer who's going to compete in our system, or processor, excuse me, come in, and I think that's going to change the price, you know, it's just going to change the economics as there's more products put in the market. Now, whether that really drives prices down some, or whether they're going to make high-quality markets products and they think the retail market has risen that horizon and they're priced high onward, that's predictive, and I don't think I have a good answer for you on that. To the extent that we share products and we still have people in the medical community and in the grow community and the license community that's come over to the OLCC system and still has the values about shared product and the medical system going, we're providing every opportunity for them to provide services to medical patients at every level of the system through this proposal. So I think it offers as much assurance as you can that you can get services and products to patients, as I think I could guarantee with any kind of system in front of you, given the point we're at. The timing, I think, it's important that we don't, and we're really trying to anticipate that we don't create bottlenecks by the way we roll this out. If everyone has the expectation that we're doing 9,000 licensees next year, well, we're not, or we're not going to have a very good system in place if we take that on in that sort of fashion. So I think we're looking at ways to roll them in, get those folks that are interested in taking on Metric earlier, moving them in, putting them in a period where they can learn that, maybe then moving and giving us time to move on to put the security requirements in that are appropriate for the site and the place. But we're going to need some time to do that. We will match this timeline up specifically and keep working with you on that. This is a pretty good rough picture, I think, of what we'd like to try to accomplish across the timing, but we need to do some fine work here to make sure that we have a fiscal that's survivable under what we expect here. I think the way that you can help us do that is you can say, we want to fund you, we want to fund an expected number of conversions within a time period, you know, kind of an outcomes based. You know, we did about 1,000 licenses. You know, you can say that's from April through, but we did most of that licensing from October till now. Most of the thousands of licenses were issued and processed in that time frame. So we'll give you some better estimates on that along the way, but we know we got that work to do, and we know you're concerned about, and we're certainly concerned about making that that conversion and transition seamless.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. When we had expressed a concern about renewals in our last conversation, and I just have this uncertainty. It's a little unsettling because one of the things that we discussed was allowing folks to go ahead and send their paperwork and their fees and then process the license application backlog as we go forward. And that would be based on the assumption within the agency that these folks had been licensed, you have an application pending, they've demonstrated the intent to be licensed, and that you would treat them as if they were licensed. And I think that is a customer service ethic, and it's something that's worked very well in the alcohol side for decades. But I worry that on the cannabis side, if you had somebody who was a less than friendly auditor, there are only two categories, licensed and unlicensed. So if you're in a pending gray area, you don't have a response back from the agency, you know, your file's in the pile, but it hasn't really been approved, you're not licensed. So I worry that there needs to be some mechanism to make sure that people who are in that pending status are actually legally licensed. If they're not, I think they run the risk of being unpleasantly surprised by a change within the Cole Memorandum understanding or within the relationship between the federal and the state. Can you help me here? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator, if you're talking about renewals. Specifically in that, right. So we can't hold them over. We can give them every protection, I think, of a license they have. That I have certainty, and the commission can make sure of that by their actions to firm that piece up if we think we need to do it. But I'm certain that we can hold those in abeyance over that time until we come back and do what's necessary to renew the license. We are streamlining some of that process now. We're considering, like, you know, why would you go if you just did a background check on someone and the ownership hasn't changed and it's the same people and you did 6 months ago, why would we do it again in 30 days? You know, there are a few things on relicensure that we can streamline this time to make that go quicker. Changes of ownership are complicated things. Those things take more time. So if there's changes of ownerships in those renewals, that'll take us more time. So there'll be some that take time, and there'll be others, I think, that in this renewal process we can move through pretty expeditiously.
Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Farioli, and these gentlemen can correct me if I'm wrong because I don't know how their system works, but I believe under the state of Oregon's Administrative Procedures Act, if you timely file a renewal application, your license continues until that renewal application is acted upon. So I think, unless they're operating differently, I think all the folks that you've described, Senator, are covered. They're licensed during that waiting period, if it's renewal.
Madam Chair, I appreciate that reassurance. It's on the record now, which means somebody's on the hook.
Well, now, not me, because I don't...
No, you're not the licensing authority. Appreciate the lateral arabesque that put you steps away from the licensing authority. We still don't have any definitive statement from the administration. We're all coasting on previous arrangements and agreements and the Cole Memorandum and other things that have all been iterated under a previous administration. I haven't heard a word yet. So I guess, unless you have any indication of the contrary, things are just fine.
Every day that goes by.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. As long as we're talking processes, something that is concerning me is where the tax revenue is. I had expected the liquor fund to be paid back a long time ago. But I understand it still hasn't. And as long as we're talking processes or things that don't seem to work, I think we'd be the most excited about getting that money in circulation, getting it to the destination it's supposed to go to. So what do we need to do to make sure that happens? What are the impediments here?
Madam Co-Chairs, Representative Wilson. So we were just in front of the Revenue Committee today, House Revenue, so was Department of Revenue, and some legislators with some ideas as well. But they're aware of that problem. So we got the payback. I believe the legislature, there's more than sufficient funds to do the payback. Mm-hmm. There are some complications with that. We were funded through the end of the biennium on that loan from the liquor fund, but we know about how much it's going to cost us for the remainder of the biennium, and you could certainly release, adequate funds to cover the bills. There is complications, and I'm not sure, I wasn't in for revenues portion of the proceedings today. There are complications because in the formula, some local jurisdictions were opted in, and then they went out, and then they opted in, and we don't know their status. We're working with AOC and LOC on certifying where they are because it makes a difference on how you're counted in the formula. So that's one of the technical details around that. I'll just say this, being around this process and working, I think you can figure out how to expedite the payment back, but we do have to figure out these issues about that amount that the counties that have changed status would get and when they would get it and how revenue would work through that. So I will check in and I'll make sure that revenue has the opportunity to get you the information you need so you understand that part of it. But the nice thing is once, if you can expedite that, as soon as it goes in the liquor fund, we'll distribute it right to local governments on the liquor fund side, the loan amount as well. So we'll do that within the month's time frame.
Just follow up. Steve, I obviously would really encourage that because a number of local governments are asking, where their money is, if they have any coming, and I'm running out of excuses.
I'm with you.
Thank you.
All right. I had a question on the basic report, and that is the 3-pound limit for people who receive basically free medical cannabis. That's 3 pounds of what? Is it the basic flower, or is it concentrate? What is it?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, we base it on 3 pounds of flower. We can extrapolate.
Or the equivalent.
Or the equivalent in other areas, but for simplification purposes, 3 pounds of flower. It would, and I think that it will, as the system matures, the idea would be to continue to look at the use by medical patients and the use by recreational patients, because now we'll be able to track by patient and average those out in terms of what that limit would be. We don't want it to be unduly burdensome. We'd like to be able to have the flexibility to change that amount based upon information we get, based upon information we get from the Medical Cannabis Commission, as well as the information. So it'll be anonymized, but at least we'll be able to then have make informed decisions, where now we're just kind of picking a number to a great degree.
And then could you just run down, I think you covered a little bit of this at the beginning, but your process for getting here, the people you included in the discussion, and kind of how your process worked to come up with this document.
You want to take that, or you want me to take that?
Sorry, I was answering the last question I had. I'm sorry. I'm sure. Could you repeat? Go ahead.
So, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, so just process-wise, we certainly worked with the co-chairs, and we also worked with Senator Farioli. Representative Wilson could not be there. You had some structure issues. We had the initial Representative Olson was there as well. We had, you know, you guys brought the group together. We worked with the group that you offered. I think almost everybody is here in the audience. It was not only AOC, but a broad variety of people. And maybe if they're here, maybe they should just stand up so the committee can see who was involved in those discussions.
Yes. Come on.
Well, the real Slim Shady, please.
They're not shy in a minute. So all these people who are standing up today were in meetings, and I think there's a couple people who weren't in those meetings, but at least I can't name them all from here. Plus, I don't have my glasses on, so I can't see their faces.
So essentially, Madam Chair, now we know who the troublemakers are.
Yes.
I want to thank everyone for their efforts on this, because was in that.
But we've had a total of four meetings related to these. They were long meetings. We had some people call in. As I said, your staff members were invited and involved. Adam came to a couple of the meetings too when he had time to come. So I thought it was an instructive process. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was really good. We tried to point out the points of contention here, but I think generally the consensus was that it wouldn't be bad to move everybody to a single type of system, though there are some opinions, and certainly some people in the room, there was some interest in moving it to Department of Ag as well. And, you know, but we were asked to do it within OLCC, so we provided the structure that we thought it should look like with OLCC in trying to address the industry and trying to address the local government issues and trying to address what we could related to what we've learned so far about regulating.
Thank you. And just if you could just step back for a minute and look at this through the lens of a medical patient, say someone who is low income, has been getting cannabis for free for years under the current system, and look at it through their eyes and tell us what their options are under this new system.
Certainly, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, I think that we've tried in a regulatory environment to address what those issues would be. I think you know, there would still be the option. Now, we believe we didn't change it at all at the OHA to provide these cards with the waiver pieces for those who are who can't afford it. I think they've exempted veterans as well. So those subsidies would be there for the individualized cardholder. Cardholders, depending on what this committee decided or what the exemption would be, would still have the ability to do those things that they did at a personal residence or potentially have it grown for them, an elderly patient who may live in a condominium or be in a nursing home. God, you know, I think the vision is to still have their grandkid or whoever else potentially grow for them to get that free product. We've tried to cost equivalent the smaller Tier 1, kind of under 2,500 square foot canopy grower to provide it on an equivalent basis, we hope, so that people could have it into the system and that we could address the issues related to selling the excess into the system in order to, you know, in order to incentivize people to continue to grow for these cardholders, in order for them to recoup their costs. There's no prohibition at OLCC from, you know, some type of cooperative or a group of people who gets together who wants to grow marijuana in a garden for free. They could give it all away under the system that we've proposed at no matter what tier. So there's still those possibilities at every level. And in addition to that, then we've incentivized the more commercial growers who are growing the 40,000 square foot plus 1 acre kinds of grows to get a 10% bump up if they give 75% of that product into the system. So I think that there's a lot of options for people. We've tried to take it from the smallest grower to the largest grower to incentivize people to take care of each other within the system and to provide that free kind of marijuana to allow people to have access to it. We haven't the legislature did not limit us in the number of licensees that we provide licenses to. So there's a variety of options for these people. I don't think that we've cut off any opportunity. In fact, we've expanded the opportunity if there was a big cooperative grow that wanted to be a 1 acre grow instead of the 98 plants in the medical system that you guys did last time. There could be a larger cooperative where people could grow multiple strains and grow on an acre and get a bump up and do those kinds of things. Those are all things that are available in the system that, you know, have an opportunity for people to build a variety of business models to do things. You know, somebody could take the Tom Shoe approach to medical marijuana, that they're going to give away an ounce of marijuana for every ounce that they sell in the retail market. You know, who knows what it is. You have allowed the creativity of the market forces to continue to do these things. And I think that Oregonians like to take care of each other as best they can. And I think our system that we've proposed today will allow Oregonians to take care of the most needy and take care of patients here in Oregon. And it has a variety of opportunity to do that and incentives to do that.
Thank you, Medical Chair. I thought that was a great question from the lens of the patient. What are my options? And I listened to your response. And what I got is, from the lens of a patient, my options are I can grow it myself. I can have a friend or grandkid grow it for me. I can be a part of a co-op. I can go to a medical dispensary and buy something there. What are the options that I'm missing? Just a so short version of, if I had a one-pager to give to a patient who had brand new to a medical card.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that the other option is, you know, at any level, they can give marijuana to patients for free, whether you're a grower, a processor, a retailer, a wholesaler, to be able to do those things and give those medical card holders and needy patients the ability to do those. So at every level, as we have set this forth as a platform, you have the ability for people who have a heart to want to take care of these patients and who see that need to be able to exercise that opportunity.
So from the patient lens perspective, they would contact a grower or processor.
Absolutely.
And it's my understanding that a fair amount of this has gone on for years in the medical dispensary where there is products being distributed for free. I mean, at least that's what I get from talking to patients. And nothing that you're doing here would interfere with that, is what you're saying, correct?
Madam Chair, I don't think that there's anything that we're trying to do here to interfere with any of that. I think that they can still have those relationships and still have that local relationship that's critically important. There's nothing to prevent those relationships from going forward. In fact, I think it provides those growers who are phenomenal growers to not be limited by the number of cardholders and it would provide, frankly, more access, I think, to the varying strains and more access to variety and opportunity to address some of these medical conditions, because they can give to a variety of people, not just their own cardholders, and they can present their product in these dispensaries either for sale or otherwise. So I think it provides people an opportunity to offset their costs and gives more people access to a broader variety of strains that may be out there in the market.
Co-chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to, I think there are two elements that actually incentivize providing for free for patients that I want to make sure I understand and give you a chance to describe. So could you talk about the 50-50, if you give 50 for free, 50% for free, you can sell the other 50% into the OLCC system scenario, and then subsequent years, the 75-25, because you actually provide an affirmative, you provide affirmative market access incentive for people who commit to giving a certain amount for free to patients. Could you describe that?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, we went back and forth related to what the split should or shouldn't be. We kicked around a variety of options. The idea that there could be some cost recovery in year one to set up these medical, to provide for any security issues or otherwise. So, you know, the issue being that they would take the gross amount of their 2,500 square foot crop. So for easy math, let's just say they grew 100 pounds, or let's just say they grew 10 pounds, right? And they gave 5 pounds away to the patients who were in the system or in their system. Then they could take the other 5 pounds and sell that off into the market to recover some of those costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So these are, if you could back that up just a little bit, we're talking about whom? We're talking about medical growers, small micro medical growers who potentially are moving into the OLCC system, because you know this so closely that you were giving me some great detail, but maybe okay. So that everyone else, including me, follows it, you could back it up even more to frame who you're talking okay. about.
You got a better cut at this?
I'll take a cut.
You can take a cut. I'll let Steve take a cut.
I'll take the mission and give it a try. So we're really talking about traditional Oregon medical growers who have grown under the healthcare system for a very long time that are not really going to be commercial operators. They don't have that value of being commercial operators. They've been in the value system of sharing medical product. Now, it includes people who are not of goodwill as well, probably, that have been in that system. But that said, these folks that have done this first time, we're trying to create a space for them to continue to do what they do, because they believe in medical cannabis, they believe in the opportunity to grow it, and we have found that the commercial system is losing market access because they could sell to dispensaries, you know, and if you want to curtail the illicit market on the other side, tracking and providing the opportunity to sell it into the OLCC system provides them the legal means to get the economic dollars out. So it's been an important mission. That how do you focus on this? I kind of think of it as micro craft, like the craft beer industry. We got big guys, and you got craft that have bloomed up in Oregon. And some of this is pretty craft culture, but it's not really a commercial culture for this. So we've been trying to figure out how you make those traditional growers the space for them to continue to do that, to provide the important function that they've provided in the system and keep it in place. And this approach tries to subsidize the grower in place, not only through the cash subsidy, but even, you know, potentially through changes in land use to make that all equal for them so they can do what they've done before, where they've done it, within a legal system. Close?
Good. Thought that was helpful. I mean, I think I see looking in the audience. May I just
yes, stop? Please.
But looking at the audience, it seems like some of this seems clear. Some of it, people are trying to figure out what it means. And I think it's going to take a little while for us to digest this and people to ask questions in this venue and probably one-on-one in other venues. But I think I really appreciate that additional information.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm sure this will all seem more understandable tomorrow morning. I was it was late in the day. I was about to ask a dumb question, and I think I'll refrain from that because I am of the school that there is such a thing as a dumb question. And, so I think I'll defer. Thank you.
My pleasure. Senator Pruzanski.
Thank you. Following up with Co-Chair Langlinger was talking about, I think it was last week, or no, it was the first week we met, Mark Mayer went through the bills that we had introduced. One of the bills, and I don't have it in front of me, actually had a provision that was going to potentially allow for a grower to go under contract for a patient through the Department of Ag, and that they would then be able to take their excess or a portion of their excess and put it into the OLCC system. So if I understood that correctly, we would allow for those who are non-commercial per se to continue to have that one-on-one relationship with their patient or patients, provide them, and then have a means that they could access or divert or move their access in excess into the commercial thing. So this micro tier one sounds somewhat similar to what I understand was another option. Are these going to stay together in the sense, are they going to be viable for the patient and grower to select Department of Ag, or are we saying, nope, everything's now going over to OLCC? And if so, I want to make certain we actually have what seemed to be answering one of the biggest issues I've had for some of the truly mom-and-pop growers to be able to still have that one-on-one relationship with their patients.
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Pruzanski, the vision was that they all be licensed by OLCC, and that things that are tracked in the seed-to-sale tracking system would be and regulated by OLCC would be available to sell as a retail sale. So that 25%. Or 50%, depending on the year you're in, would be the excess that would be in the system. We did not contemplate something being grown at the Department of Agriculture, regulated by the Department of Agriculture, and then entered into the OLCC system. The idea being that the micro tier would be able to address those family farmers that could still be, while there wouldn't be a formal coupling relationship with the cardholder, which is what we have today. We plant count and cardholder numbers is what we have today, that we would convert it to the canopy size, and that this micro-tier subsidized system would be able to take care of those patients and those needy patients to address the cost of entry and barrier to allow them to gain access to their medicine via the OLCC system. So there was never any contemplation that it be licensed or grown or regulated in any other way except through the Oregon Liquor Control Commission.
Senator Barrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not really that concerned with the idea that you'll figure out a way for medical users and growers to connect with just the flower products. Yeah, and with the excess going into the market, that's illogical, and I can see how that story problem works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not concerned with the more exotic strains and the higher THC contents, same sort of thing. What concerns me is the growers who are producing edibles, concentrates, extracts, and oils, because they are going to need a larger volume of feedstock, and they're going to have more expenses in terms of processing and testing. And so I'd love to have case studies, and you know, the same folks who stood up can probably answer the questions for us, which would include a fact set. How much raw product is needed to meet the demands for edibles, concentrates, extracts, and oils? What is the total production if you extract or produce or concentrate? What are the costs for the processors to do that? and then what amount of that product would need to be produced in surplus to be able to recapture all the stranded costs for producing and concentrating those medical products. So, you know, I think most of us would just be guessing, and they wouldn't even be good guesses. But the folks that stood up are in the process of solving those problems in a practical manner every day. But I'd love to see, you know, not connected to a particular grower or a patient, but just the sort of here's what the feedstock requirements are, the processing costs, and here's how I'd recapture that. To get some idea of what the licensing requirements would have to be and what the volumetric requirements are. And I would just ask them to bring forward some case studies with math attached. Otherwise, I don't know how we're going to get it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That's a good point. Are there other questions?
Madam Co-Chair, if I just could, I would just want to offer into the record, because I spoke to our needs over time, but we do have this medical use cannabis board that we're factoring in. In some ways, it was important to focus for us to be able to differentiate those high needs patients to be able to get the additional marijuana. That was a pivot point that we needed, decision we needed made there. There are others that were in your legislative recommendations, legislation around here that would like to have the specific functions with this board. Need to spend some time actually integrating that with OHA and in the structure, because we didn't spend any time looking at, you know, how that would actually be put into the administrative structure. So just like I was asking for our timeline in that, OHA hasn't been involved deeply in this conversation at this point, and I think we'd be well served by working with them and the governor's office to make sure you understand how that comes together, because that's going to be vital to your consideration of it and what it does.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. I wanted to, it seems like we may be moving toward the end of this session, and I wanted to thank you and thank, I wanted to specifically call out Rep. Olson, who is not in the room, but I'll let him know. I wanted to thank him because he, you know, the convening of this group of people who spent 20 hours over the last few weeks was an effort. Oh, look, there he comes. it was actually Representative Olson's suggestion as we were kind of trying to figure out how we walk through the next steps of work on this issue. And I think Representative Olson recognized that at times we've worked across sectors and backgrounds and party lines pretty well to try to do some stuff in this committee. And he said, what if we were to bring together a combination of Republicans and Democrats and people from across the different sectors and just pose the question, if there were a way to unify the regulatory structure, what would it look like? How could we meet a variety of needs that people have? And so for people who are watching this, what you're hearing today is an effort after a few weeks and 20 hours of work together that a bunch of people did to try to answer that question. How would we structure something to meet a bunch of needs that we hear people articulating? So this is the first iteration. It's a good faith effort to try to talk about what that would look like, and we've got some time on our hands, and we will probably have conversations about this. But I wanted to thank Representative Olson for his vision, Representative Wilson for his willingness to participate via staff so we wouldn't be in a quorum pickle, and everyone who made time, and Senator Farioli and Senator Burdick, everyone who made time to take a first crack at this. It's first step, and hopefully we'll be able to work together to get to something that we have a broad range of support for. So thanks.
Thank you for saying that. And the people in this room have worked very diligently on this and very constructively on this. And we're not there yet, but we're getting down the road. And I'm optimistic we'll be able to get to a good place on all this with a lot of effort by everyone here. So on that happy, cheerful note, did you have something else you wanted to say?
No, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. On that happy, cheerful note, we will continue with our 5 p.m. starting point. And for now, we are adjourned. Adjourned.